If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This season, Instacart has your back to school. As in, they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit. And they've got your back to school supplies like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first call your parents to say, "I'm sorry." And then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee for your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Luciano. Mike, how you doing today, buddy? What's going on?
Well, grand scheme of things, things are going okay. Jets world is starting to pick up a little bit because we got some actual football of varying quality being played because it's OTAs. Sure. But we got
respect the UFL. Respect the UFL.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to say actual professional football. Okay.
That's professional.
Yeah, man, I try with all those spring leagues, man. I know The Rock's trying here, but it's just not hooking me like they did in the old days. I gave the Alliance of American Football a shot, for crying out loud.
Yeah. So, dude, Vincent Smith just had a touchdown in the UFL like the other day. So that's fun.
What do you want, a cookie? Vincent Smith?
All right, man. Look, I respect the UFL. We respect the UFL on this podcast.
I also hit 3 3-pointers in a row at LA Fitness. Why don't I get the same height?
Okay. I'm glad.
We're both athletes in that regard.
Good for you, buddy. Good for you, buddy.
We're both athletes in that regard. Sorry, Vincent Smith, if you're watching. On the 1% chance you're watching, sorry, Vincent Smith. Beyond all that, we'll actually get into some Jets football because there are some absences at Jets football, that were, I guess, unplanned because some up top seem a little perturbed by it. We'll get into some of the guys who are there because there's some moving and shaking on the depth chart, and talk about some once departed Jets because we haven't hit our quota of Zach Wilson and Mekhi Becton talk lately because they are in Denver and Philadelphia. But we got some updates for you on both of them. We can see how green the grass really is over there, but before all that, as always, you can find us on all the platforms, you know, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. And we're on YouTube at The Jet Press. That's where you can subscribe. That's where you can like the stream. Those are both ways you can support the show. You can also do it by going to Apple Podcasts and just leaving a good review because that really helps boost us up the charts in a pretty meaningful way. So we will get into OTAs because there is one big name that the Jets acquired after Bryce Huff left. They said, "We will upgrade an edge rusher with Hassan Reddick." And Jets fans were excited to see Hassan Reddick make his Jets debut, and he's not at OTAs. And Robert Saleh, the way when he was questioned about it, he said that he hasn't really had a lot of contact with Hassan Reddick, which is a little more, I don't want to say alarming, because that's too big and scary a word to describe that, but I am a little like, oh, that's kind of weird. Because normally when the big names skip OTAs, if it's not contract related, a lot of times they're always saying, "Hey, I'm working with my trainer. I'm working with my nutritionist. I'm doing this." Like Lamar Jackson missed Ravens OTAs. He's doing work with his trainer. He's doing work with other people. He's not just sitting on the couch eating donuts. I get all that. Reddick might be contract related because Philly is a really good team, a Super Bowl contender. They were good and they used him a lot and he was good. So you would think that that'd be a perfect spot for him. And he's from the area, too. You'd think that'd be the perfect spot for him. He demands a trade. Why? Because he wants a deal. Because he wants a new contract. The Jets made the trade, it seems like, with the intent of giving him that new deal. And it just hasn't really taken yet. I think this isn't, like, too big of a deal. In the end of the day, like, he'll be here. He's not going to hold out, I don't think, into the season. That'd be foolish. But I guess just from a selfish point of view, you want to see Hassan Reddick there. Now, I think they'll get a contract done, maybe like a 1 or 2 year extension with some extra guarantees just to get him in the building kind of thing. But that'll happen soon. But I'm still anxious for Hassan Reddick, and I don't see him yet.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should be surprised that Hassan Reddick is not at OTAs. He is entered the last year of his contract. Not only that, but it is completely non-guaranteed. He's due $15 million this year. None of that is guaranteed. So from the player's perspective, showing up to voluntary practices, risking injury, which, you know, injuries don't happen a lot at OTAs, but they happen. Last year, Chuck Clark tore his ACL. A couple of guys around the league have already, you know, torn their ACL, tore their Achilles. Like, stuff happens, and it's really unfortunate. So I don't blame Hassan Reddick at all for not wanting to show up to OTAs. That's not the surprising or noteworthy part. I think the thing that raised some eyebrows yesterday, Tuesday, when Robert Saleh was speaking to the media, was when Saleh said that he had not had contact with Hassan Reddick. Now, the Jets, he did say that the Jets know where he is. They know what's going on. They know what he's doing.
He's not just on the lam and right, he's not on the run.
He's not going all like Dimitri Patterson on them. Like they know where he is.
Did we ever find Dimitri Patterson?
I don't know. Maybe there's still like a bounty. Not bounty sounds like the wrong word. Maybe there's still a missing person.
Check his villa in the south of France.
But yeah, they know where Hassan Reddick is. So yeah, they take that for what it's worth. But it is noteworthy. Like, oh, okay, you haven't really been in contact with him at all this spring. You would think that if he's not going to show up, you're at least talking to him. You know what's going on. Saleh would not say that it was contract related, but we all know it is almost definitely contract related. The Jets knew this when they traded for Hassan Reddick. They knew that he was seeking a new contract. It is one of the many reasons that the Eagles decided to trade him. It was one of the largest reasons that they decided to trade him and instead signed Bryce Huff instead. I think the more interesting aspect of this is because I'm not worried about Hassan Reddick playing this year. He'll be on the field for the Jets week 1, barring any kind of disaster. The real, I guess, next step is, will he show up for mandatory minicamp? Because as the word suggests, that is mandatory. It is not voluntary. By the time we're on the show this week or next week at this time, the Jets will be in the middle of mandatory minicamp. It kicks off next Tuesday, I believe, the June 11th. So if he doesn't show up to that, then it would be an official holdout. And then it's a reason for, I still don't want to say concern, but it's like, okay, this is like a real, real situation that we now have to deal with. I do think he'll show up for mandatory minicamp based only on the fact that Robert Saleh said that the Jets expect him to show up for minicamp. If he doesn't, then it's more of an issue. Either way, I do think something gets done. Probably the framework that I've seen discussed and that has been mentioned by others, something around what the Texans gave Danielle Hunter, which was like 2 years, almost $50 million. That's kind of what you're looking at. I think it was Zach Rosenblatt of The Athletic said that Reddick was probably looking for anything, you know, $25 million a year or up. Connor Hughes of SNY said he could be looking for as much as $30 million a year, which that would be the second highest paid edge rusher in the NFL behind Nick Bosa. So that is a lot of money. And I think that's the bigger discussion here. I do expect the Jets to extend Hassan Reddick. I don't expect it to be some 4 or 5 year contract, probably looking at 2 or 3 years. That would be my guess here. And if you want to compare that to Bryce Huff, because that's going to have to be a comparison that's made, because the Jets made the decision to move on from Bryce Huff and they traded for Hassan Reddick to replace Bryce Huff. That's essentially what happened. It's not exactly 1-for-1, but it's as close to 1-for-1 as you can get in the NFL, especially because they both essentially just swap teams.
Bryce Huff did a 3 for Hassan Reddick was basically the deal.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. Exactly. And Reddick or Huff was given, I think, $17 million a year. I think it's a 3-year contract. He's significantly younger than Hassan Reddick. Obviously, Reddick has much greater sack production than Huff. He has the accolades. He was a defensive player of the year finalist. He's been second team all pro. But if I'm sitting here right now, and I've been saying this throughout the offseason, and I'm sure there's going to be Jets fans now that Hassan Reddick is on the Jets and now that Bryce Huff is not on the Jets, that will disagree. But I don't think so. Hassan Reddick is a significant upgrade over Bryce Huff. I think he's more proven. I think I'm more confident that he is Would I even say that? I don't know if I'm saying. I think they're in the same tier of player. I think they're both excellent, excellent pass rushers. I think from the Jets' perspective, the big difference is that Reddick, they believe Reddick can play 3 downs and he can be an effective run stopper as well as an elite pass rusher. I've made my thoughts on Bryce Huff very clear in the past. I think that the Jets significantly undervalue Bryce Huff and kind of pigeonhole him into a role that he's much better than. And we might see that with the Eagles this year. But I think it's going to be a big discussion when the Jets, assuming they do sign, you know, re-sign Reddick to, say, it's $25, $26 million a year, 2-3 year contract. That's going to be significantly more money than Bryce Huff got. Reddick's a lot older than Huff as well. It's going to be a really interesting discussion when that happens, especially, you know, we'll see how it goes this season. If if Bryce Huff and Hassan Reddick put up similar production, yeah, it's gonna seem like the Jets made a mistake there, especially, I mean, even if Reddick puts up less production, then obviously they made a mistake. So I don't know. I think that's going to be a discussion. We've talked about it a lot throughout the offseason, almost ad nauseum. I've criticized the Jets for how they handled the Bryce Huff situation, but I think now that Reddick is not holding out, but it's very clear that he wants a new contract, and it's pretty clear that he wants it done, I think, before the start of the season. So I imagine that's going to happen. I think it kind of reopens those discussions of, did the Jets mishandle this? Did they make the wrong decision letting Bryce Huff walk and trading for Hassan Reddick? I think right now, if I sit here in June, I say it's a more of a chance that I will believe that they made the wrong decision than that they made the right decision.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, if you're looking at it from Reddick's perspective, he's currently the 22nd highest paid edge rusher in the league. Yep. And he's a lot better than the 22nd edge rusher in the league. Because his deal, right, it's about $15 million a year, the deal he signed before. It might have been, I think, with Carolina, because then they got traded to Philly as part of that. Or it might have been with Philly.
I think it was with Philly. I think he signed it with Philly.
Okay. Yeah. But he is only a couple million per year above Carl Granderson and Chase Young. They both got $13 million a year, even though Chase Young's a lot better than Carl.
Chase Young and Carl Granderson got $13. Carl Granderson got $13 million a year. That's crazy.
Yep, 4 years, $52 million.
That edge market, man, that's wild.
And he is currently making the same as Uchenna Nwosu in Seattle. And he is currently making less than names that include Alex Highsmith, Jonathan Grenard, Von Miller with that horrible contract, and Harold Landry. So you could see how he would want something done now, especially because he's 30.
And there's no guarantees left. He's got zero guarantees left.
There's no guarantees. Now, if he gets $25 million, which is what Danielle Hunter got 24 and a half from the Texans.
Yep.
If he exceeds that, he will be the sixth highest paid edge rusher in the league.
Yeah.
Only ones above him, Nick Bosa, who he's in a tier all his own money-wise.
Yep.
Josh Allen, Jaguars Josh Allen. Brian Burns, TJ Watt, Miles Garrett. So that's a hefty crew to put yourself in. Yeah. And the Jets are saying, well, because Reddick's also not the biggest guy. I mean, they're playing him an inside linebacker, for crying out loud. He's not like a Bosa brother who's going to be that good of an edge star. He's like 6'1", probably. I think he's listed at like 240. But they are banking on the sack production heavily because he's one of only, I think, two or three guys in the league to have double-digit sacks in each of the last four seasons. And he's done it in three totally different defensive schemes because he was in Arizona where they finally started using him as an edge rusher. Then he went to Carolina. They basically let him do whatever they want defensively. He moved around a lot in Carolina. Then he goes to the Eagles, who didn't know what they wanted to do, and Reddick was still productive. So that, to me, I would call that an adverse situation because he very rarely has had a defined role. Even when he came into the league, they were playing him as like an inside linebacker when he started with the Cardinals. So if the Jets can just put him in the role he succeeded in the most, which it seems like they're going to do, they even said, like, we'll take some bumps and bruises run defending if he's going to get the sacks he gets, which I think he'll get the sacks that he normally gets. I have no problem with him getting that contract. I know the edge market's inflated, but this is what you got to do. And they made that deal knowing this is what they got to do. You just got to speed up the timeline by a year. That's the only deal. They're doing it now instead of probably next offseason, which is when Douglas would probably have wanted to do it. You just got to do it a year early.
Yeah, look, I'll play devil's advocate here, partially because I do believe this, and I'm a Bryce Huff believer. I believe that Bryce Huff is a three-down player, and I believe that he will be a very, very successful player with the Eagles. And, yeah, looking at those edge contracts, man, I mean, Huff's making less per year than Harold Landry. That's crazy. Like, $17 million a year for Huff in this edge market? That's a really good deal. That's really, really good value, especially if Reddick ends up getting $25, $26 million. In no world do I think he's worth $8, $9 million more per year than Bryce Huff, somebody who is, what, 4 or 5 years younger than Hassan Reddick?
But do you think Reddick is worth $25 million, irrespective of Huff?
Yeah. I mean, in this market, yes. Because it's like, do I think Hassan Reddick is the sixth best edge rusher in the NFL? No, I don't. But like, that's not what's important. Jalen Waddle's now, I think, the fifth highest paid receiver in the NFL. He's worth that contract. He's not the fifth best receiver in the NFL, but he's worth that contract because that's how this stuff goes. That's how the market just continues to evolve.
Who do you think's better right now, Hassan Reddick or Danielle Hunter?
Hassan Reddick. I think Hassan Reddick is better than Danielle Hunter.
Okay. So then you would, and then you, if you gave the, because Hunter's 32.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I think he's worth that contract.
I 30 years old.
I absolutely think he's worth it. Like, again, and this is how I evaluated when we were talking about the Hassan Reddick trade when it happened. There's two different discussions here. When the Jets traded for Hassan Reddick, if you know, ignore it, not even ignoring what has already happened, but just saying what has already happened has already happened. Trading for Hassan Reddick was a great move on the part of the Jets, was a great move on the part of Joe Douglas. To get a star pass rusher in the building, you significantly improved your team, you improved your defense, you improved your pass rush, you improved your Super Bowl odds. All of that is great. And they did so at a very, very reasonable price. Obviously, you're going to have to pay the guy. But in terms of draft compensation, it was very, very reasonable. But that conversation is different than the conversation of totality of did they mishandle the entire edge rush situation this offseason, which I do think that they did, especially if you include the John Franklin Myers situation, which I've been very outspoken against. Now, again, all of that being said, I trust Robert Saleh to run this defense and for the Jets to have a top five defense this year. I trust that even though Bryce Huff's gone and even though John Franklin Myers is gone, the Jets will still have one of the best defensive lines in the NFL. I fully do still believe that. So again, it's a very complex situation. When I say that I'm not happy with how the Jets handle their pass rush situation, their edge rush situation, and that I don't think that they made the right decision with Bryce Huff and Hassan Reddick, it's not the same thing as me saying like, oh, I think they're just going to be bad. Like, I think it's going to take a significant step back because
the word mishandle does sort of, when you say mishandle, it implies that there was some sort of like big calamitous mistake, I guess.
I think it could be better. I think that they handled the situation wrong. I would rather have, because the other aspect of this is you probably don't have to trade John Franklin Myers if you're not preparing to pay Hassan Reddick $25, $26 million. And if you don't sign Javon Kinlaw for $8 million or $7 million and you just bring back Quentin Jefferson. Like, again, all of these moves combined, if you just said, hey, would you rather have Bryce Huff at $17 million, Quentin Jefferson at $3 million, and you keep John Franklin Myers versus Hassan Reddick at $25 million, Javon Kinlaw at $7 million, and you lose John Franklin Myers, I would much rather have option A. So that's when I say they
miss only Lucky Fodu out of this, man.
I mean, Lucky Fodu is there in either scenario, probably. I think he's a constant. He's not a variable. But that's why I say I think they mishandled it, because I'd much rather have the alternative, which this isn't like just playing fantasy GM. The alternative was very possible. Like, the Jets absolutely could have done option A. They absolutely could have paid Quentin Jefferson the $2 million or whatever that the Browns gave him. They could have given him $3 million, whatever. Who cares? They could have given Bryce Huff $17 million. If he wanted more, they could have given him $18 million. And it would still be a better situation. And then, you know, they didn't have to trade John Franklin Myers if that happened. So I think that's when I say they mishandled it. I would much rather have option A, but I don't think option B is bad. I don't think Hassan Reddick is a bad player by any means. And I think now that you have him, yeah, you probably should extend him. And I think $25, $26 million is very reasonable. We'll see about Javon Kinlaw. I get the upside there. I understand why the Jets made that move, but you know, that's another conversation. So yeah, it's a complex discussion. I do, you know, just going back to him not being in OTAs, I do think they'll get a deal done. I don't think it's a situation where, you know, where we're talking about this in September and it's still a discussion. I do think they'll eventually get a deal done this offseason. But obviously, you know, if you're giving him, you know, 2-3 year deal now, you're potentially sacrificing future cap space for guys you might want to extend, like, because they're extending Hassan Reddick, maybe they don't get to keep DJ Reed. That's another discussion to have. You know, I think all of that combined is why I say that they mishandled it. But again, still confident in the Jets defense, very confident in the pass rush being really good. I just think it could have been handled a lot better this offseason.
Now, you are a little bit confident in the Jets' defensive line, even with their, personnel. I don't want to say miscues, but personnel decisions.
Yep.
The running back room. How confident are you in the running back room?
I'm very confident. They got Breece Hall, buddy. They got Breece Hall, but I know we're going to talk about who's behind him. And Breece Hall, top two running back in the NFL. I can't not be confident.
Top two. Wow. I wouldn't even have said top two.
He is the second best running back in the NFL. I will.
Better than Derrick Henry?
Yes. Yes. Derrick Henry is still good. Like, he's not washed by any means. He's still good, But I'm not putting Derrick Henry in even top five running back conversations at this point.
Okay, Ravens fans, don't clip that because that could come back to bite us.
Do Ravens fans still think Derrick Henry's a top five running back? If they are, they're wrong. I'm sorry.
A lot of people. I mean, didn't PFF have him at two also?
No, I doubt it. I don't think so.
I believe they did. Hold on.
That would be stunning to me. Derrick Henry's good.
PFF had him at two.
All right. Well, that's insane.
Brees Hall was seven, by the way.
Right. And do you agree with that, Mike? Do you agree that Brees Hall, who was top four in scrimmage yards last year in a terrible offense, is five spots?
I think he's certainly top five. Probably. Nick Chubb is on there. I feel like a healthy Nick Chubb.
Healthy Nick Chubb healthy Nick Chubb might be better than Brees Hall. Like that's same tier to me. Chris McCaffrey's tier of his own.
Bijan, no. Close, but no.
Bijan's close. Bijan is close. Bijan,
no.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset if you put Bijan top five. I think.
And then Jonathan Taylor, who...
I'm lower on Taylor than most. I think he's good, but I think he's a bit overrated. But I think he's very good, obviously.
I feel like that's a coin flip, but regardless...
Sure.
Brees Hall's good.
Yeah.
Behind that, there was this big miasma of backs because the Jets added two running backs in the draft, which I feel like caught everybody off guard. People thought they probably would add one, but not two, contributing to a trend Joe Douglas has of picking running backs. I mean, he seems like he picks one every year. I feel like he has.
He's averaging more than one running back drafted per year because he just drafted two this year. He has drafted at least one running back in every single draft that he's had.
P. Ryan, he had LaMichael P. Ryan. He had Brees, obviously.
Yep, P. Ryan, Brees. Michael Carter, the Izzy, and now Davis and Allen.
So. Isaiah Davis and Braylon Allen. Now, Allen was the favorite for the RB2 job. Mm-hmm. And it looks like not only is he going to be the RB2, it looks like he's running away
as RB2. Now, it's June, but as of now, absolutely.
Well, he's running away with it as much as you could in June without pads on for OTAs. Yeah. He's being as impressive as you possibly can be. According to SNY, the biggest thing, though, because everybody knew he was going to be good running the ball. I mean, he's 6'1", 235. That's huge for a back. And he's fast. Like, nobody had a question about Braylon Allen running the ball. Everybody thought he could do that. And everybody thought he could pass protect because he's big, and they had him do it a lot at Wisconsin.
Yep.
So the question was going to be to avoid – I don't want to say avoid becoming a Derrick Henry. Like, that's a bad thing. But unless he's that singularly good at running the ball like Henry is – can you do something else to maybe show that you have some passing game upside? And apparently his hands have been one of the highlights of camp so far. He apparently made a bunch of grabs deep down the sideline. This isn't just dinking and dunking. Like, they're having him run real routes, and he's doing a pretty good job of it. And, I mean, this is to be expected. I mean, this guy is such a good athlete. He's basically only been playing running back for, like, 3 years because Wisconsin brought him in as a linebacker. So he's still learning. He's still getting – and he's only 20.
Yeah.
He's still learning. He's still improving. A lot to like about Braylon Allen. The more shocking thing in many of these tidbits was that Israel Opanikanda has been banished? Okay. banished to the shadow realm because he is not even the fifth string running back? Because Davis is apparently RB3. And even Tariq Cohen, who we were discussing Tariq Cohen on the last show. We thought this was going to be – half of it's a lottery ticket gamble to see if this guy can even play at the NFL level anymore after the injuries and the layoff. Like, you don't even know what he's going to do. And then on top of that, if he can play, if he still has that athleticism, he's probably going to be more of a kick returner and a special teams guy as opposed to a straight-up running back. He's always been small. He's never going to be an every-down back. That was what I thought Tariq Cohen was signed for. Apparently, he's getting reps above Israel Abanikanda. And I certainly know what it ain't for his pass protection because Tariq Cohen is 4'8" and 95 pounds. So he's not stopping edge rushers that come into the backfield. Poor Israel Abanikanda. That would honestly frustrate me. I'm really slurring here. That's how mad I am. Trying to be Israel Abanikanda and I'm getting all tongue-tied about it. Abanikanda, because if you were to say, Izzy, you're RB3, competing for RB3 with Isaiah Davis – because you didn't show us enough ball security and pass protection. Yeah. I go, you know what? Fair enough. Because those were big flaws for him at Pitt, and those were big problems for him in the NFL. Then Tariq Cohen comes in. He jumps over, and I'm thinking, well, now what's going on here? Because I certainly know he isn't immune to fumbles, and I certainly know he isn't the best pass protector in the world. So what's going on here? I feel like this move makes it – now I'm going to say more likely – than not likely that Israel Banacanda is not on the team by the end of the preseason. It just, I think Joe Douglas is ready to admit with the Allen pick and the Davis pick that he messed up here, which is fine. He was a fifth round pick. You're allowed to mess up fifth round picks.
Sure.
But I feel like he's willing to say, you know what? Didn't work. Move on. We've got a good running back room now, especially Allen, who's dominating. Let's not keep trying this Abanacanda shuffle over and over again.
I mean, a couple things here. You know, obviously, it's still June. Like, a lot can change. Just because Izzy Abanacanda is not, you know, necessarily standing out right now, not impressing with the reps that he's getting, doesn't mean that come August, he can still win the RB2 job. Like, I'm not going to roll that out.
A lot harder now, but yeah.
Sure. Like, I think he can absolutely still not only make the team, but win the RB2 job and be RB2. But first, I mean, let's talk Allen real quick first, because Brees Hall has been sidelined with, I think Robert Saleh referred to it as lower body stuff. Doesn't sound like it's a concern. In fact, Saleh specifically said
they don't want to push him now.
Right. Saleh specifically said they're not concerned. There's no reason to be out there if he even has any sort of injury. Two, you want to get guys like Braylon Allen, like Isaiah Davis, extra reps. So it makes perfect sense. If he's not out there in mandatory minicamp, it'll be a little more eyebrow raising. Obviously, if by the time training camp comes around in later July and Brees Hall's still out, then it's an actual concern. But there's no reason to be concerned right now. But with Brees Hall out, Braylon Allen has been getting the first crack with the first team offense. Now, all the running backs have rotated a little bit with the first team offense, but based on reports coming out of the three open media OTA sessions that have happened, the order has been Braylon Allen, and then kind of a mix between Isaiah Davis, Tariq Cohen, and Israel Banacanda, but kind of in that order. Izzy Abanacanda has been working the most with the second team, with the third team, as compared to the other running backs, which is very notable. And again, we'll get to that in a second. But first on Braylon Allen, look, I think I said it right when they drafted him. I thought he had a lot more receiving upside than what we saw at Wisconsin. They did start throwing the ball a lot more in his senior season, or his junior season, his final year at Wisconsin, and he looked good. He had one drop on 30 targets all year, which that's very good. I mean, you know, again, take PFF grades for what they're worth, but he received a pretty good PFF receiving grade as well. Like, I don't think that's an aspect of his game that was discussed a lot, especially because guys, what, 6'1", 235? Like, you don't think of him as like a natural pass catcher. And again, based on the reports we've heard, a lot of the stuff was more short yardage catches up until yesterday's practice, where he made a leaping 50-50 grab from off a throw by Tyrod Taylor. Kind of accounts differ from how far the throw was, but it was pretty far down the field, deep down the left sideline.
And he just counts different. Like, we're talking about like Bigfoot or something. Like.
I know. And we're talking about an OTA practice.
Talking about aliens.
But yeah, I mean, there were reports saying like, oh, he looked like a wide receiver out there. Like that's high praise for a guy who's a 6'1", 235, you know, supposed to be like a short yardage running back. So Braylon Allen has done as much as you can to impress as a running back in June. It's really hard to evaluate running backs in OTAs because obviously there's no pads. It's difficult to fully evaluate them. I will say that is one of the reasons that I'm not stunned about Izzy Abanacanda working behind the other guys, because they really didn't trust him in the passing game last year, the Jets, not at all. Not only just as a pass blocker, but as a pass catcher, as obviously he had the ball security issues. So it's not surprising to me that someone like Tariq Cohen, who that is his role at this stage. If he has a role, his role is as a third down pass catching back. Like, that's what he's going to be if he has a role in offense. So it makes sense to me that he's getting snaps in those scenarios, because you see a lot more of that in OTAs. You see a lot more pass catching opportunities for the young running back, or for the running backs. That said, it is a little noteworthy and concerning, because usually when you get to OTAs, usually when you get to this time of the year, the incumbent players on the roster tend to be ahead of the rookies in the depth chart. I expected, even though I didn't know if Izzy Abanacanda was going to win the RB2 job, and I probably didn't think he was, I still thought, you know, in June, in May, he'd be running with the first, second team offense. Like, I figured he'd be ahead of Braylon Allen and ahead of Isaiah Davis just because
of seniority reasons alone.
Exactly. He's got the seniority. Like, Just because of that reason. But, I mean, same reason that Carter Warren has been working with the first team offense while Ole Fashan is working with the second team offense. Like that with Morgan Moses, because Morgan Moses is still rehabbing the shoulder injury or pec injury, I think it was. I wouldn't have been surprised at all. That's why it's very noteworthy that not only is Israel Abanacanda working behind Braylon Allen, he's getting fewer reps with the first team offense than Isaiah Davis, but he's also working kind of behind a guy who they just signed off the street like a week ago in Tariq Cohen.
So that hasn't played in a half decade.
Right. So that's notable to me. And I definitely don't think it bodes well for his roster spot. Again, there's still a lot of time. A lot can change, but it almost is starting to feel like the writing's on the wall here for Izzy, that the Jets just didn't trust him. They don't trust him. They feel that they probably whiffed on that pick. And unfortunately, I mean, he's still very young. He's 21 years old, I believe, or he maybe just turned 22. So very young player. Unfortunately, I think some of it is also, and we talked about this, I think earlier in the offseason and then after the draft, it does seem like the Jets are kind of changing their offensive scheme to going towards more of a power run offense based on the additions that they've made along the offensive line with guys like Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, John Simpson. So Israel Vanacanda doesn't really fit that scheme very well. He's much more of a fit for the older scheme, the you know, outside zone scheme that they were kind of running under LaFleur and then eventually under Hackett last year. So I think that probably plays a role as well. Again, it's not too late for Israel Vanacanda to make an impact. And I think, again, once pads come on, once training camp comes in July and in August, he will have more of an opportunity to make an impact and to stand out. He's definitely going to get plenty of reps, I'm sure, in the preseason. But right now, it's not looking good. It's still only June, but definitely not an encouraging sign for Israel Vanacanda. But for Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis kind of getting overshadowed by Braylon Allen, but the Jets are giving him a lot of run with the first team, and he's also reportedly looked very good. So looking good for the two Jets running backs that they drafted this year. But as for last year's draft pick, not so good.
Imagine being Olufoshana. You got to watch Isaiah Davis play with the first team, and you can't.
Well, the other part of it is they're also, like, they're keeping him at left tackle, Olufoshana. Like Carter Warren, he's right now their backup right tackle. If the season were to like start right now, he'd be the backup right tackle. I don't know where that leaves Max Mitchell, might not be on the team, but Warren is the backup right tackle. Fashano is the backup left tackle. And Tyron Smith also didn't practice on Tuesday, just kind of like a standard rest day. Fashano did.
He's Tyron Smith.
Right. He's fine. It's, in fact, honestly, the fact that he's at every OTA practice and been practicing pretty much every day, that's a testament to him because he does not need to be doing that. But Fashanu was working with the first team offense then. So they just want to keep him at left tackle.
I am reminded too, looking at a Vanacanda, who, by the way, had 12 catches his last year at Pitt. So he's not exactly a receiving upside threat here. Maybe even less of a receiving upside threat than Allen was coming out of Wisconsin. He had 1,431 yards, which is pretty good, and 20 touchdowns. That sounds impressive.
But
10 of them came in one game against Virginia Tech. He had 6. And then he played Rhode Island, who's an FCS school. He had 4. So that's half of his touchdown production right there. So I think that was my concern about, well, how much of the crazy – I know you draft based on traits, but how much of the senior year production was just a crazy 4 or 5 week heater against inferior competition? Because then he also went to go play on West Virginia. It was one of the best defenses they played that year, and he had 15 yards on 8 carries. So. Yeah, I think a lot of that is starting to come to roost here with Izzy Abanikanda.
And it's like it's the little things. Like that's what it appears to be with Izzy Abanikanda. That's the Jets don't trust him to do the little things. They don't trust him as a pass blocker. They don't trust him to hold on to the ball, and they don't trust him as a receiver. You're not going to be able to play in the NFL if you can't do those things. He could be.
Well, they pick him as a running back. It sounds like he can't do anything a running back does.
I don't think that they didn't trust him to do those things when they drafted him. I think that they didn't realize how big of issues those were.
No, it's just funny when you say, like, the things he has to work on are running the ball, catching the ball, blocking, and everything else.
But the thing is, those are the things that are often overlooked, especially the blocking. Like, that's very often overlooked. But if you aren't an RB1, you aren't the top guy, you are trying to earn a role. Also, he doesn't play specials. That's the other thing. Aside from, he does have experience as a kick returner.
He plays them poorly.
Right. He returned 2 kicks last year, and he fumbled one of them. So, like, it's just he has lost the trust and faith of the coaching staff, and that's very clear. They didn't really trust him last year, and it's why, even though Dalvin Cook was struggling so bad and Jets fans are, like, pounding the table, we were doing that too. We're like, hey, get Israel Vanacanda on the field. Let's see what he could do. Well, he got on the field. Not only was he didn't do much, but they just clearly did not trust him. They clearly did not trust him. He struggled as a pass protector. He fumbled the ball. Like, he had issues there. If you can't do those things, you're not going to have a role in the team. And unfortunately, unless he can continue to improve on those things over the next couple of months, I don't know if there's a roster spot for him.
He's getting Jason Marrowed, however you pronounce it.
Who is that? I don't know who that is.
Remember the tight end, Jason Marrow?
Oh, Jason Marrow. I think you said Jason Marrow. Jason Marrow. Yes, the tight end. Well, yeah, Jason Marrow just could not catch a pass to save his life.
Well, so it's like he came in, you know, with a little bit of hype his rookie year, and then by the time his second year came around, they're like, he can't do anything in the NFL, and then he just disappeared. And Rex Ryan hated him. I remember that too.
Really quick, before we get into the discussions about the former Jets players, I will bring up this comment here from Charles Harrison because I want to ask you a question, Mike. Charles Harrison says, good afternoon, Jet Nation. Good afternoon, Charles. Miko Hardman did not work out last year. I hope Cohen can give the Jets a spark. What do you think this means for Tariq Cohen, Mike? Like, do you think that he has a legitimate shot to make the team? Because I think, obviously, we could say probably Breece, Braylon Allen, and Isaiah Davis are probably locks for the 53-man roster. Jets don't have to carry four running backs. They could carry Nick Bawden as that fourth running back and, you know, kind of use him in that role. That's something a lot of teams do, is if they do carry a fullback, they only carry three running backs. Do you think Tariq Cohen has a real chance to make the 53-man roster, especially with Evander Kanda struggling?
No. It's just the tough part is I think he's above Evander Kanda, but even then he's still the fourth running back, I would think, behind Allen and Isaiah Davis. I think Isaiah Davis is clearly a favorite over him.
Yeah.
And if it comes down to returning, even though he had some faults, I'd rather have Xavier Gibson as a returner. And I don't want to just use Tariq Cohen. I don't want to just use a roster spot and an exclusive return guy. So, I mean, he could do it. I don't think it would be the end of the world, but I just, there would have to be a lot of moving and shaking, and the Jets would probably have to cut a guy that I would not want them to cut to keep Tariq Cohen. So
what if that guy?
The fact he even got a contract signed is he's already won already. He's already come back in that sense.
What if the guy that they cut is Nick Bawden, and then they just carry four running backs, and then they use a guy like, maybe they carry four tight ends, have Ruckert, have Kuntz, have Yeboah as your three backup tight ends. I mean, Ruckert is probably going to be able to play more of that second. I assume they're not going to use him as much as an H-back this year, or probably play that second tight end role. And I don't think Kuntz or Yeboah have been able to do much as H-backs in the past. I don't think I've seen Kuntz that at all.
I was so excited for Zach Kuntz when he just blew up those testing numbers.
Right. Yeah. It's a seventh round pick, first of all, but I'd like to see him. Kenny Yeboah, by the way, has been really good this spring. That's a guy. I mean, we haven't really talked about him. He's been really good this spring. Jeremy Ruckert had a pretty good practice on Tuesday.
I remember liking Yeboah at Ole Miss. So just based on that alone, because I remember liking Ole Miss film.
He was a surprise undrafted guy. Like, a lot of people thought he was going to get drafted.
Oh, yeah.
The Jets, I mean, you never, you know, take this stuff with a grain of salt. I think the Jets said that they had or it was reported that the Jets had a fourth round grade on him. So,
of course.
Obviously, whenever that comes out, it's like, well, why didn't you draft him then? Like, why didn't you draft him?
Totally.
But yeah, good afternoon, Buffalo Jet fan.
What's Salute.
Up? What's up, my Salute, friend?
Buffalo Jet fan. So, Buffalo Jet fan came just in time for more discussions about our favorite Jets player ever.
Oh boy.
Former Jet now.
Oh boy.
Zach Wilson.
Oh boy.
Because we hadn't hit our quota and we need to get Zach Wilson talking. So
yep.
we will press onward. I feel like there's been a lot of people on social media, mostly non-Jets fans. It's one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen, where I've never seen so many non-Jets fans look at an obviously bad quarterback and go, well, obviously the Jets are ruining him. Like, it's one thing to have Jets fans do that, because you do that with your franchise quarterback because you're delusional and you want your quarterback to be good. But the fact that I know it's social media and Twitter's not a real place and Twitter's not real life, but the amount of attention I've seen of, oh, he's going to kill it in Denver. Why? He never killed it anywhere else. He killed two Jets seasons in a row. He's not going to kill it on the field. He
killed my will to watch the Jets, but, you know.
Flip on that Raiders – not the Raiders, the Chargers game from last year. Flip on the – no, he wasn't in the Falcons game. The Patriots game.
Any Patriots game that Zach Wilson is playing.
Any Patriots game. Especially the I didn't let the defense down one. That was – that sucked my soul out of my body, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Pause. Now,
all right. Yeah, that's a fair pause. That's
okay. That's a fair one. But Wilson goes to Denver. And I will say this. If you want Zach to compete for a starting quarterback job, the only place that he has a non-zero chance is Denver. Because that is wide open, apparently, because Bo Nix was overdrafted. And he's an okay quarterback. I got like a second round grade on Nix. I actually liked him kind of on par with McCarthy, but I don't know if he has the arm talent. And a lot of his plays at Oregon were just get the ball, look really quick, throw it out. And then the longer he held on to the ball, the worse he was. So there are some issues with Bo Nix. He had Jarrett Stidham, career backup. And then Wilson, who has all the talent in the world. No one's ever said he doesn't have enough talent in the world. So if you're a delusional BYU fan who wants to see him succeed, like Brian in chat said, why would you want to compete for a job? If you're a BYU fan
and no.
You parasocially attached yourself to Zach Wilson to such a psychotic degree that you want to see him start somewhere else.
And if you're Sean Payton and you think you could just fix every quarterback.
Oh yeah, because he's never fixed anybody outside of Drew Brees, who would have been good without him. But anyway, sure. there was this report going around from a garbage account called ML Football, who lies a lot to get engagement.
Yeah.
And they basically said that Zach Wilson was impressing more than anybody else, and he was getting first team reps, and watch out, Zach Wilson season's here. How many times do we say variations of that over the last 3 years at OTAs? And then basically every Broncos reporter who was there said, number one, you were wrong.
Yep.
Number two, he is the third string quarterback. So it was far away from starting almost as you can mathematically be on the active roster.
Yep.
And third, he was by far the worst of the three there.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a lot of more of the same for Zach in Denver, who, again, all the arm talent in the world. And you'd think going to Sean Payton would at least help, because Sean Payton's offense is based around getting the ball out quickly, high completion percentage, low turnovers. I mean, Russell Wilson was apparently so bad last year that they had to incur like $80 million in dead cap to get rid of this guy.
The largest dead cap hit in NFL history, I believe.
By almost double, I believe.
Yeah.
26 touchdowns, 8 picks. The fact that in that offense,
yeah,
you're still struggling. Give it up, man. It's time to. This is like, I remember Josh Rosen was bouncing between the Browns and the Vikings practice squads. I'm like, dude, give it a rest. You tried. You gave it a good effort. No one said he didn't try hard, but it's over. It's over, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised particularly, but yeah, I mean, I would have loved to see the replies on that like ML Football tweet where it's like, oh, because I think it was like, oh, Zach Wilson's running with the first team offense. And then Broncos reporters were saying, well, all three quarterbacks have been running with the first team offense. But not only that, Zach Wilson has, I believe the word Ben Albright, you know, Broncos reporter, said that Zach Wilson is a distant third, is how he put it, in that competition.
That's a very diplomatic way of saying he sucks.
Yeah, I would love to read the replies to that tweet, though, but I am blocked on both my personal and the Jet Press account for calling out some misinformation in the past. No, by ML Football.
Oh, he blocked me. And Warren Sharp blocked me, too. So I got a couple weird. And one of the PFF guys.
A lot of the engagement farmers, you know, that's
yeah. Warren Sharp blocked me. I remember there was that report when Doug Peterson got fired by the Eagles that, like, Jeffrey Lurie was consulting with him over Doug Peterson. And I think he, like, blocked everybody who liked that article or something like that. So.
Oh, like a mass block. Wow.
Yeah, like a mass blocking spree. That's the only – I don't think I've ever mentioned the guy. So
yeah,
that's the only reason I have to explain it.
But yeah, I'm not surprised that Zach Wilson is QB3. Honestly, I don't really have much to say other than the fact that, yeah, if you're a distant third in a quarterback competition featuring rookie Bo Nix and Jarrett Stidham – yeah, it's not really boding well for your future. Again, it's June. Like, it's June. Everything we're talking about now is going to be the caveat of this doesn't matter that much. It's going to matter a lot more come late July, come August. That's when it really matters. Like, talking about a quarterback competition in OTAs is kind of silly because it's hard to take much away. But for someone like Zach Wilson or even like a Bo Nix, you know, it is – you're making a first impression. You're making a first impression with your team. You get into camp and – or, you know, to OTAs and – your new coaches kind of get a first look at you and they're like, all right, what do we got? Like, what are we working with here? It's kind of like when Christian Hackenberg first got to OTAs and the Jets almost immediately knew that they made a mistake. Like, it's kind of like that where it's like, oh, like if it's that bad, you can tell. I don't know if it's been that bad with Zach Wilson, but you know, even if it doesn't mean a ton, especially for a guy, you know, like Jarrett Stidham, who at least has been around that coaching staff a little bit. It does mean more for like a Zach Wilson where it's like, all right, you know, this is your first impression. If you're already a distant third, doesn't mean you can't win the job, but probably not voting well for your chances to win the job.
Christian Hackenberg, who, by the way, is coaching football in Winslow Township.
And he's in the news. Did you see why he's in the news today?
Good or bad?
Neutral. I mean, I guess bad, not on his end necessarily, but I think he was on Ross Tucker's podcast and he said what I think is actually a pretty fair take about the Jets, about like his time with the Jets. Some fans probably will be upset about it, but he basically said that like New York was the last place he should have gone to, and it was a really bad place for him. He, while also acknowledging his own like personal blame, he took personal blame, saying that he was young and, you know, he probably didn't handle things certain things the correct way, but basically being like, yeah, you know, it was not a good situation for me at all. Like, they kept four quarterbacks. I did not get a lot of reps. He was like, I know I needed a lot more, you know, time and development, and I didn't get it. And that organization was a mess from top to bottom, which
I mean, man, there was very little chance of making it work, but you were not going to make it work the way the Jets tried to make
correct.
It.
Correct. Like, and like the fact Duke was overdrafted. He was a second round pick. I mean, there have been few players more overdrafted in the modern NFL than Christian Hackenberg.
I was stunned.
Yeah. Everyone
he got picked.
That's more Christian Hackenberg in the second round is more stunning than Michael Penix in the 8 overall
by far.
By far.
Because Michael Penix was a borderline first-round talent.
Correct. Like, Hackenberg, there were definitely teams and analysts who did not have him as a draftable prospect. Like, at all. Like, he was like a day three guy through and through, only for traits and upside. Like, that's it. Take him in the second round was insane. So that put unnecessary expectations on him. Combine that with a fan base and a team that was starved for any semblance of young quarterback play that they could latch onto. It was just a bad situation.
I saw the one game he was active for in the NFL,
and he didn't play. But
that was the Bills game. That was also the only game Cardell Jones ever played.
Wow,
that game.
You mentioned it before. Two AAF legends. I'm pretty sure Cardell Jones was also in the AAF.
Yes, he was. I want to do a little bit of a live reading really quick, because this is this is Eric Richter in the New York Post, who also got some Wilson intel.
Okay.
The Denver Post. So he's also quoting Denver Post. Reported Wilson looked, quote, rattled during OTAs, and specifically with 11-on-11 drills. But that Zach Wilson rattled. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Caught off guard by a corner bits from Jaquan McMillan and threw a ball up for grabs. Zach Wilson, that was intercepted by PJ Locke. He also overthrew Marvin Mims on a deep route, missed Javonte Williams on a short pass, and had a ball thrown errantly to wideout Brandon Johnson that was broken up by cornerback Damari Mathis. His performance has been categorized as inconsistent. So
inconsistent. Where was the good? That was just all bad.
Well, they said he had one nice throw, but I mean, is that
one good thing and 10 bad things is not inconsistent.
That's consistent. That's the dictionary definition of consistent.
Mike, if you asked AI to write a recap of Zach Wilson's first practice with the Broncos, that would be it. Like, AI didn't know anything about the practice, and it was just like, what do you think? AI, what do you think Zach Wilson looked like?
Rattled, inconsistent, ball up for grabs, not in rhythm.
All of that. That is exactly what an AI would write about
Zach Wilson. That's practice with no pads on.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Right. So,
as Brian says in chat, if only there had been a way for the Broncos to know he couldn't play before training.
Justin?
I'm sure some people in the front office knew, but Sean Payton was like, look, I could fix him. I could fix him.
There's no Max Mitchell to blame here this time.
Yep. No Xavier Newman. No Nathaniel Hackett.
No Mekhi Becton. Ah, transition. Because Mekhi Becton is now on the Philadelphia Eagles. I will say this. For Mekhi Becton, I do think he has been humbled.
Yeah.
By how his Jets tenure went. And he realized, because last year he was deplorable near the end of the year. I think he still led the league in sacks allowed.
Yeah, I believe so.
He at least had enough self-awareness to realize, I am not a starting lineman currently. I could be one later, but currently I am not.
The market told him that if he didn't know already.
Yes. So where am I going to go? Well, I'm going to go for the place that just helps me the most personally. So he goes to Philadelphia. And the Eagles with Jeff Stoutland, since the retirement of guys like Dante Scarnecchia or Hudson Houck, who was the Cowboys coach in the 90s and the 2000s, was like regarded as the best ever. Really the only two offensive line coaches you know by name for good reasons are Bill Callahan, Browns, who now he's with the Titans with his son as the coach now, which I thought was a cool move.
Jets wanted him too. They interviewed him, I think, last year.
Yeah, but coaching with his son had to be two, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And I believe he coached with the Jets under Rex, right? Bill Callahan?
Yep, he was their O-line coach, I believe, on the Rex.
And so Callahan and Jeff Stoutland. And Mekhi said, I'm going to go to Jeff Stoutland, and I'm just going to be a sponge and absorb everything. Because everybody that goes to the Eagle, Jordan Mailata didn't even play football. And he learned enough from Jeff Stoutland to become really good. So, of course, I can. And he goes to Eagles OTAs as a backup, and now he's moving to guard. Which I find kind of, not morbidly funny, but I guess just ironic. because there was that whole I am a left tackle.
Yep.
Okay, you say that, and then he gets hurt and gives up 12 sacks. So this is the last house on the block for Mekhi Becton. If he can't make it here, I don't think he's going to make it in the NFL. And I applaud him at least having the confidence and the willingness, the flexibility to move to guard. I can't get it out of my head, though. All that, I am a left tackle. Well, okay. I guess you're not. Your play told us that, and the market told us that. So I at least think that he has some sort, because no one's ever doubted the power. He can run block.
For sure.
It's always been the mobility with him. So this, at least you can hide some of it. And if Landon Dickerson goes down, or I think Tyler Steen is projected to start this year at guard.
Yeah.
He goes down. Now you got somebody in there. I like this move for Becton better than Denver for Wilson, honestly.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there is not a better O-line landing spot in the NFL than the Eagles. Whether you're starting, whether you're riding the bench, whatever, there is not a better landing spot for Mekhi Becton than the Eagles. Even if he's not going to be starting, that's a really good landing spot for him. And I believe it was Jeff Stoutland specifically that was talking about Mekhi Becton and saying that he believed that he had some kind of untapped versatility that we've not really seen in his career for various reasons. Obviously, you could be like, oh, the Jets should have done that. Well, he also should have been probably more willing at that point, you know, because again, the whole
and he should have been hurt for 2 years.
So. Right. And I understand, again, when you're a young, talented offensive lineman, because he is a very young and talented, he's a very talented offensive lineman. Like, he's a very talented player. And I do think a lot of his struggles in pass protection last year are unfortunately a product of the injuries that he has suffered. I mean, even he was healthy last year. I don't think we see quite the same mobility that we saw from his rookie season, because Mekhi Becton defenders and people who are still big fans of him, and I'm still big fans of his potential. Like, I still think he can be a very good offensive lineman in the NFL. I do wholeheartedly believe that, and I'm rooting for his success. But they'll point to his first season, because his rookie year, he was genuinely really good. Like, he was great. Like, he wasn't an all-pro, but as far as a rookie left tackle, you're not going to get many better seasons than what Becton did as a rookie in his first season in the NFL. In fact, I always bring this up because it's just, you know, to show the narrative of the time. There was a preseason poll that was released, I think, in June of 2021, going into his second season. That was like a poll of I think it was 50 execs and coaches and scouts from around the league. And they were told to rank the top offensive lineman in the NFL. And Mekhi Becton was sixth on that list. Or top offensive tackles in the NFL. And Mekhi Becton was sixth. That shows, not like, he wasn't like sixth in terms of like, oh, long-term value. He was sixth as far as right now. We believe that this year he'll be the sixth best offensive tackle in the NFL. That's crazy. It's crazy to think of a time where that was reality, but it was. Like, his rookie season was genuinely really, really impressive. So I do think there's still some untapped potential with him. Although a move to guard, I think, is probably a good move. The Eagles have not made it clear. I don't think he's moving to guard like full time. I think they're just trying to get him increased versatility. He'll probably still be playing some tackle and guard. This is more a way, you know, to hopefully get him on the field if an injury does happen, whether it's to Jordan Mailata or if it's to, you know, Tyler Steen or Landon Dickerson or whoever, he can now step in potentially as your sixth offensive lineman, as your top backup offensive lineman, and hopefully fill a role at, you know, three or four offensive line spots, which is a very valuable role to fill. Obviously, there's not many guards that are 6'7", 365, whatever he is, whatever he's going for now, 360. He's huge for a guard. He's absolutely very tall. I can't think of another 6'7" guard in the NFL, but it makes sense to try and hide the issues that he has kind of being on an island. And I'm not sure he'll ever get that full range of mobility back, unfortunately, because it's just, you know, when you suffer two serious knee injuries to the same knee, it's really hard to recover from that, especially when you're 360 pounds. So I think it's a good move for him. I'm rooting for his success, and I do think it's a really good landing spot. We'll see. You know, I hope that he gets the opportunity to be on the field this year, whether it's a tackle or guard, and you know, maybe he can salvage a career. I'll be rooting for it. You know, it's unfortunate how his Jets tenure not only ended, but just how it progressed after his rookie season that was so encouraging. But yeah, I'm rooting for the guy, and I think it is a good move for him, obviously, to showcase that versatility. And I think he can find some success at guard, even if size-wise he would be an anomaly for the position.
It's funny, like, Becton was more – Like Becton was very vocal a lot of times about how displeased he was. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've ripped him on the show for stuff like that. Like, dude, you don't need to be doing that. Like, the whole tweeting everything and blaming the coaching staff for him getting hurt and all that.
Some of the issue was Keith Carter. Like, I feel like he definitely did not vibe with Keith
Carter. Oh, yeah. Well, nobody does.
Yeah. So,
except Robert Saleh, he does. That's about it.
Heath Carter, there was a thing with Connor Hughes. He said something about like Heath Carter is, it was Heath Carter spoke publicly to reporters and he was kind of very open about how he's trying to grow as both a person and a coach. So hopefully he can do it. You know, I think he maybe took a look in the mirror and realized
that's media training. What are you supposed to say?
It might be, but maybe the optimist in me is hoping that that's true and that he is trying to, you know. Because look, the other part of it is like this Jets offensive line has a lot more veterans on it now. So if Tyron Smith don't like Keith Carter, Keith Carter's not going to be getting the benefit of the doubt. Like it's one thing
Carter's not going to coach Tyron Smith. Tyron Smith could be the offensive line coach pretty much.
But like that's what I'm saying. Like if Tyron Smith does not like Keith Carter, just does not like his presence. If Morgan Moses doesn't like Keith Carter, Keith Carter's not getting the benefit of the doubt. It's different than if Chris Glazer is complaining. You know, like who? Yeah. No offense to Chris Glazer, but like the Jets.
Taylor Lewan complained, and he's got some cachet. And
Keith Carter's not in Tennessee anymore, is he?
Well, that's probably why. So.
Yeah, exactly. Ben Jones, I believe, didn't like him either.
Oh God! But it's funny, like looking back on that. Even with all that, I still have a part of me that's like, it'd be nice if Mekhi turned it around and.
Yeah,
with Wilson, not that I'm like hate him on a personal level, but like I don't have the thirst to see him succeed the way I do with Becton.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because Becton was more like.
Well, His was injuries.
But Becton was also just more like vocal about it. And Zach Wilson, to his credit, really wasn't like he said all the right things, Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, I want to see Zach Wilson in the UFL. I don't know why. But Mekhi, I actually wouldn't mind seeing succeed. I can't reconcile that part. I don't know why.
I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I don't know if this is a mean thing to say. I don't think Zach Wilson would want to play in the UFL. I don't get the vibe from him.
He has much of a choice if he wants to keep playing football.
Well, that's kind of my point here. And maybe I'm off base, and this probably isn't even my place to discuss. But I don't know. I don't get the vibe that he's like dying to have a successful football career. I just don't get the vibe. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think he would – go to the UFL to try and extend his football career. I think if it doesn't work out in the NFL, that's it for him. I think he's done.
You know, he's got a six-figure job lined up with his uncle's company.
So. Right, and that's part of the thing. And again, some of this is just me projecting, or not projecting, but more like, you know, just kind of taking a couple of leaps forward and assuming things.
Go to JetBlue stuff and wear a Jets hat and sign autographs, and then there you go. And then
with Becton, I definitely get a different vibe where it's like, I think he's very motivated, especially this, you know, the last offseason he had with the Jets. I think that kind of turned a corner for him where he was clearly very motivated to try and make this work. And I think that's another reason why more fans are probably pulling for him over Zach, where it's like, well, Wilson was just bad. Also, there's the stuff of like, there's a lot of rumblings that Zach Wilson was not very well liked by his teammates by the end of his tenure with the Jets. It was not like immediate.
He single-handedly ruined two of the best defenses I've ever seen. So
right. And part of that, it was obviously, I imagine, a result of his play. Mekhi Becton, I haven't heard anything about Mekhi Becton not being well liked by his teammates. So I think that's part of the reason. Like, I think more
fans too injured to be around him, so that's why.
Oh man,
he's never there.
I think more fans like connect to Mekhi Becton, especially because of the injuries he had to struggle through, than Zach Wilson. But that's my guess for why they're maybe talked to. Although there's a lot of Jets fans who are very adamant about rooting against Mekhi Becton too. So
thank you guys for tuning into this episode of the Jet Press Podcast. As always, you can find us on all the podcast platforms. There's Apple, there's Google, there's Spotify. Wherever you get them, we are there. And we're on YouTube. That's where you can subscribe. That's where you can like. Yep. You can do all those things to support the show. And you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. Boys and girls, that really does help. So, Justin, now that we have finished another week, any final thoughts?
It's June. We got next week, we'll have mandatory minicamp. And then pretty much a month of nothingness. So we'll have to come up with some fun content ideas. If you guys have any ideas, throw them in the comments. Let us know. Because, you know, I think last year we thought of some like fun evergreen ideas that we were able to throw out there. But we'll see. Next week we'll have mandatory minicamp. We'll talk about that. Kind of the last like spring recap. Kind of the last thing to talk about football-wise. Hopefully, barring any kind of crazy things going on. Until late July, which is when training camp kicks off. But until next time, until we're talking about minicamp next week, thank you all for joining us on the show today. Go follow Mike on Twitter @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter @JustinT3. Follow the Jet Press @TheJetPress. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press podcast. I have been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. See you guys next time.
We'll see you folks next week.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.